Hello and welcome.
Today, we're diving into something that's becoming a buzzword in education, learning analytics. But don't worry, we're not going to overwhelm you with jargon or fancy dashboards. Instead, we're focusing on simple, classroom-friendly ways to use data to support your teaching.
Exactly. Think of this as a low-cost, high-impact approach to learning analytics. We're talking about small, meaningful bits of evidence that you can collect and use to tune your lessons, strengthen feedback, and help individual students.
That's right, James. And the best part, it's all about being student-centered. We're looking at methods that respect learners' prior knowledge, motivation, and self-esteem. So, let's kick things off. Why bother with learning analytics in the first place?
Great question. For starters, it helps you figure out what students already know and what they don't. This is key because, as educational theorists like Aushubel and Piaget stress, learning works best when it connects to prior knowledge.
Right, and it's also a game changer for formative assessment. With the right data, you can provide feedback that actually helps students improve, rather than just pointing out what they got wrong.
Exactly. It also helps you spot patterns, like who's confident, who's struggling, and who might be slipping through the cracks. That way, you can intervene early, before it impacts their self-esteem or your rapport with them.
And let's not forget, these simple numbers, like averages or how spread out scores are, can be great conversation starters with both students and parents. The key, though, is not to overdo it. We're not trying to measure everything.
Right. The goal is to collect just a few reliable signals that guide your next steps. So, Lisa, how many indicators should teachers focus on, realistically?
3. That's the magic number. Any more than that, and it gets tricky to interpret and act on without spending hours on it. For example, you could focus on indicators like a pre-test average, exit ticket correctness, and student confidence.
Or, if you're looking at skills and transfer, you might track a mastery grid, the ratio of students hitting a target score, and the spread of test scores. It all depends on your lesson goals.
Exactly. And for engagement, you could look at participation, the number of formative attempts like quiz retakes, or even the quality of self-reflection journal entries. The point is to pick indicators that align with what you're trying to achieve in that lesson.
And once you've chosen your indicators, it's all about keeping the data collection simple and low friction. For example, you can use micro pre-tests, just 3 to 7 items, to check prior knowledge before a lesson.
Or 3-question exit tickets at the end of the lesson. One question could check factual understanding, another could connect to prior learning, and the last could be a self-rated confidence check.
You could also do quick polls during class, use observation checklists while you're circulating, or even simple rubrics for assessing a key skill. And for those who like tech, tools like Google Forms or LMS Quizlogs can automate a lot of this.
Absolutely. But let's talk about making sure it doesn't become overwhelming. James, how can teachers collect data without feeling overloaded?
Great point. First, automate wherever you can. For example, use Google Forms to feed directly into a spreadsheet. Second, time box your data collection, like spending just 5 minutes on exit tickets at the end of a lesson.
And don't feel like you need to do everything every lesson. Rotate deep checks. Maybe focus on one group of students this week and another next week. Reusing the same question formats also saves time on marking.
And you can even delegate some of it. For example, students can collect peer feedback or use self-assessments to contribute to a class summary. Visual cues like traffic lights or sticky notes can also make confidence checks quick and easy.
That's brilliant. Now, once you've collected your data, what kinds of quick analyses can teachers do without needing a statistics degree?
Start with the basics, like class averages. It gives you a snapshot of how the group is doing. Then there's standard deviation, which shows how spread out the scores are. For example, if you have a small SD and a high average, most students probably got it.
But if you have a small SD and a low average, it might mean everyone struggled, and you might need to reteach the topic. A large SD, on the other hand, suggests mixed learning. Some students got it, and others didn't, so differentiation is key.
You can also look at item difficulty. Basically, the percentage of students who got each question right. It helps you pinpoint which concepts were misunderstood.
And don't forget pre-post gains, comparing pre-test and post-test scores to see progress, or even confidence versus correctness, which can reveal if students are overconfident or underestimating themselves.
That's such a great insight. Once you've spotted these patterns, the next step is interpreting the results and deciding what to do. For example, if most students met the lesson objective, you can move on or deepen the learning.
But if they didn't, you might need to reteach using a different approach, like visual aids or hands-on activities. And if there's a big spread in scores, you could target struggling students with scaffolds or offer extension tasks to high performers.
And if you notice students are confident but wrong, it's a metacognition gap. That's an opportunity to build reflective discussions or confidence calibration exercises.
On the flip side, if students are unsure but mostly correct, they might just need a self-esteem boost. Positive feedback and low-stakes practice can help build their confidence.
So, Lisa, if a teacher wants to start small with learning analytics, what's one actionable step they can take in their next lesson?
I'd say create a three-question exit ticket. Collect those at the end of class and then compute the class average, confidence average, and one-item difficulty. From there, decide one concrete action for the next lesson, like a mini lesson or small group reteach.
That's such a manageable way to start. And remember, it's not about tracking everything. It's about focusing on what's meaningful and actionable. Thanks for breaking it down so clearly, Lisa.
My pleasure, James. And to all our listeners, if you've found this helpful, why not give it a try in your classroom? Keep learning and keep teaching.